Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hello and welcome to Book Cheat, the book club podcast where I've read the book so you don't have to. My name is Dave Warnocky, Brisbane. How are we feeling out there? All right, thank you so much for coming out. It's Father's Day today. Any dads in? What do you mean, my key demographic, dads? Isn't it? All right, no worries. Well, thank you so much for coming out and thanks for dishing your dad and hanging out with me today. So what happens on this show is I've read a classic book so you don't have to. Each week I talk two guests through such a classic. You ready to meet your guests tonight? Well, would you please put your hands together and welcome to the stage tonight. We've got Luke Heggie and Chris Ryan are here. Yeah! Hello, hello.
Hello, Dave.
How are you?
What a treat. We're so well.
Yeah, good.
We're just balancing our beers in
the beers
weird,
up on the beer shelf.
In the weird ancient window.
On the show, I talk you through a classic book. Are you big readers now? Have you ever been in your life?
I have been. I studied literature, but I won't remember a thing.
Oh, okay.
I've stopped reading, but I'm trying to start again. It was an attention span thing during COVID.
Yeah, okay.
I'm trying to get it back.
But what? So the English literature, like you've studied a lot of classics then?
Yeah, a few.
Fantastic. That might come in handy tonight. How about you, Luke?
I used to read a lot more than I do. Having a family puts a dampener on that because your name gets yelled as soon as you open a book. So that's not gone, but I do resent people getting read to like babies on those apps. I know people do it, you know, follow your dreams, but I'm not walking around doing that. I prefer to just read a book. But I get a few pages in my sleep, so not much at the moment.
Three pages at a time. Well,
yeah.
I've read a book. Can you believe that?
Congratulations.
Incredible.
But Beth, I only started this show because I used to be a big reader. Dropped out, and every year I'd have the New Year's resolution. I'm going to read more. And then I get to, you know, end of January. I hadn't read a single word. So, and I thought I'd start a podcast where I have to read a book.
Yep.
That will keep me honest. That's and here we are. Episode 91 or something.
91? Fuck. One book a week. 91
well,
weeks.
Well, I do a couple a month, and then every now and then I take 3 or 4 months off.
Yeah.
I come back. No, I'm not that great with resolutions. I'm not that great. But this week we're talking about a book. This book is called Goodbye, Mr. Chips. Ooh, anyone heard of that?
No.
I mean, the dads would have loved this one. Honestly, you should have brought your dads along. Mm. Goodbye, Mr. Chips. How about you guys? Is that ringing any bells?
Heard of it, but not read it.
Yeah, I haven't read it.
Didn't come up in the literature course?
No, it didn't. But... a friend of mine read it, read it and saw that maybe there was a movie as well.
Yes, there is.
Oh, that'll do that.
And and said it was deeply sad.
No, honestly, it's not that sad. It's a very sentimental book.
Sentimental.
So strap yourselves into that on this Sunday afternoon. Now, I remember a while. The reason I've picked this book is it's very hard to pivot with the podcast where you have to read a full book. I picked this book because I thought my podcast partner in crime, Matt Stewart, was going to be a guest on the show today. And a few years ago, I don't know if anyone remembers on Do Go One, our other podcast, he mentioned that growing up, his grandparents had 3 videos on tape.
Yeah.
And they were The Wizard of Oz, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, and Goodbye, Mr. Chips. And he said they only ever watched The Wizard of Oz.
So he didn't even get around to watching it. He just saw it on the shelf.
Yeah, he was like, nah, that looks... Yeah. Even with an option of 3, it looked that dull. And that's what I picked for you all today. So, yeah, all those movies came out in 1939, and I told Matt that one day I'd do the book, Goodbye, Mr. Chips. This one is for him. And also, people can suggest the books. I've got a link in the description of this episode if anyone at home wants to suggest a book. And this one's been suggested by one person other than Matt Stewart. A big shout-out to someone calling themselves Dog Marta. From Vancouver in Canada, are you in tonight, Dog Marta? There you go. Dogmata wrote, "You said you would, and you have not done it yet." So, Dogmata, here I am. I'm living up to it.
That is one thing that podcast listeners will not forgive, is broken promises. Yeah, like they have got long memories, and they're vindictive. That's my opinion.
Yeah, they do not forgive or forget.
Yeah.
So I'll tell you a bit about Goodbye, Mr. Chips. It's a 1934 novel by English writer James Hilton. Hilton was a very popular writer in his day and also wrote Lost Horizon, which is best remembered for the origin of the concept of Shangri-La. So yeah, he came up with Shangri-La. He also wrote screenplays and won an Academy Award for Mrs. Minerva in 1942. And early in his career, he wrote a book called Murder at School under the great pen name Glenn Trevor. I love with a pen name, you can pick anything. And he chose Glenn Trevor. Either of you ever tried to use a nom de plume for anything you do? Or of a rebrand?
Not a rebrand, no. But, yeah, when I'm, you know, up to no good.
Oh, okay.
My name is often Bevan McMurkin. Not even up to no good, just mailing this shit like that. You don't want your real name on that. Like, you've got to give a name for something. You want to have to give a name?
Bevan McMurkin. McMurkin.
He's done some bad stuff online. Beware of Bevan.
Okay. Well, I have to beat that for the recording. Bevan McMurkin.
Nah, that's all right. It's not, yeah. No, not be right.
This comes up quite a bit, but the one rebrand I tried to do was in... So they already know. They know what I'm going to tell you. Was in year 8 at school, I tried to get everyone to call me Cobra.
Excellent.
That was...
A self-appointed nickname.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
One of the worst things.
It was not successful.
I'll tell you, yeah. Of course not.
Why'd you choose that?
I thought it sounded pretty badass.
Yeah.
Yeah, God.
Yep.
I was going I was a bad boy, you know, going through my bad boy era.
Amazing.
A guy I know once told me, he goes, "My name's Gordon, but you can, everyone calls me Turbo. You can call me Turbo." I said, no.
You can call me
Turbo. I'm calling you Gordon, you dickhead.
Turbo, I love it. All right, so the story we're talking about today was written under his own name, not Glenn Trevor. It was hugely popular on release, putting James Hilton on the map, and has been adapted for the silver screen 4 times. The first and most enduring in 1939, starring Robert Dinant and Greer Garson. And that's the video that Matt refused to watch all those years ago. So
there's been more, like three remakes, sorry. There's been one in the last 20 years, hasn't there?
Yeah, there was. I think it might have been a TV adaptation. And then there was also one of the 60s where they decided to make it a musical.
Oh.
So you can imagine that. All right, I always start with the opening line to give you a bit of the author's words.
Great.
To get a bit of feel for the work of James Hilton. So this is the opening paragraph. When you were getting on in years, but not ill, of course, you get very sleepy at times. And the hours seemed to pass like lazy cattle moving across a landscape. It was like that for Chips. As the autumn term progressed and the days shortened till it was actually dark enough to light the gas before call over, for Chips, like some old sea captain, still measured time by the signals of the past. And we're off.
Right. So Mr. Chips isn't a dog. It's like...
That was your prediction. Right. Goodbye, Mr. Chips is the dog.
Yeah, it's like a dog dying, sort of. Like
no, it is. It's our main character. It's very much a man.
All right.
Full name, Mr. Chippington.
Oh, okay.
And he tried to do a rebrand as well.
Yeah.
Chips.
I mean, who doesn't love a chip? You know.
I mean, it's the best thing in the world. But now he's an 85-year-old retired school teacher who's still affectionately called Mr. Chips.
Oh.
Can you get too old for a nickname?
Well, yeah.
Can you be an 85-year-old turbo?
I love the Turbo's idea of that, actually. I mean, we're all going to get older if we're lucky.
Yeah, but nicknames shouldn't.
You don't reckon?
Mr. Chips. I know, I grew up in a different era, but fuck, if I had a teacher called Mr. Chips, he would have been bullied.
Yeah.
No question. His left arm would be ribbons by 4 p.m. every day.
Well, for decades, he taught at a private school for boys in southeast England called Brookfield. But now Chips lives across the road in a room in a house of a lady called Mrs. Wickett, and a doctor comes by and tells him that he's in good health and has made it to an age where he's outlived all the horrible diseases, which I'm not sure if it actually works like that, but he tells Chips, you're healthy. But on the way out, the doctor tells Mrs. Wickett to keep him out of the cold as his lungs are very weak. Chips was born in 1848 and he's 85 now, it's 1933, and his mind is full of memories, and we sort of flash back to a couple. Nearly all based around the school. Now, he started teaching at Brookfield in 1870 when he was just 22 years old. And at first he was a bit of a grumpy young man. He's getting less grumpy as he's got older. He struggled with discipline and keeping the kids in line. So he was a bit on edge on the first day, and he walks in and they're all sitting there in front of him. And when one kid accidentally dropped the lid of his desk, he's like, right, that's it. 100 lines. Just sort of loses it.
Yeah.
And the kid's like, oh, okay. Like, you just did a sneeze just right then. He would have lost it at that. He would have hated that. So he's very over the top, on edge. He's not a confident young teacher. But the young Chips quickly realised that the university he went to and the connections he had to upper society weren't good enough for him to ever to progress to become a principal. So it turns out it's both what you know and who you know that matters, and he knows nothing and knows no one.
Right.
So he accepts very early on, I'm just going to be a teacher.
And he didn't think that perhaps his skills were related to the fact that he didn't get further in life. He thought it was about the school you went to and the
yeah,
people
you Yeah, that's right,
had.
Yeah. Right. The two most important things, as we all know. As we all know. Well, the book's right, he accepts this, and this is what it says. At 40, he was rooted. Settled and quite happy. At 50, he was the doyen of the staff. At 60, under a new and youthful head teacher, he was Brookfield, the guest of honour at old Brookfeldian dinners. At 65, he retired. However, after an unexpected turn of events, he would soon be teaching back at Brookfield. What could possibly happen? Bit of foreshadowing there. That's good writing. That's good writing.
I'm sorry, mate.
But now 85, he's still heavily involved with the school, and the students, both old and new, come by and visit to have a tea with him at Mrs. Wickett's place. He mixes together these elaborate tea concoctions and always has cake on hand. And at 5 p.m, he always wraps up the conversation by saying, well, it's been very delightful meeting you like this, but I'm sorry you can't stay. I'm terrible at leaving a conversation or an event. Do you have any way that you wrap up?
Is that what he says? He kicks people out by saying, sorry you can't stay.
Sorry you can't stay.
All right.
Puts it back on them.
Yeah, right. Very good. Bloke I know used to walk out, like we'd be at his house when I was, you know, in Brisbane, as like late teenager, having a party. He'd walk out in his pyjamas after a while and say, you know, party's over. Like he wouldn't even say anything. Oh, we got to go.
You see, the PJs are bad. Out, you've got to go.
Yeah.
You've got to go. Well, he's doing that at 5 p.m.
Yeah, okay.
One day one of the boys leaves and says, quite a character, the old boy, isn't he? All that fuss about mixing the tea, a typical bachelor, if ever there was one. But the narrator jumps in and tells us this is not true. He says, quote, Chips was not a bachelor at all. He had married, though it was so long ago that none of the staff at Brookfield could remember his wife. Flashback.
Amazing.
We're back in 1896.
So, are you reading the book? You've read the book.
I've read the
What's going
read the whole book?
Can you believe this is a condensed summary of the book? Okay.
Yeah.
It's story time.
Yeah.
It doesn't say in the script of the book, flashback.
Right, okay.
I wish it did. That would have been amazing. It just suddenly went back in 1896. Chips is 48 years old. He's just been made a house master at the school. So not quite principal, but he's looking after the boarding students. So he has made it. He's made it a bit. During the summer holidays, he went up to the Lake District in England with a colleague for a week of hiking. But the colleague was called back to town unexpectedly, and Chip stayed on his own. And one day when climbing on a mountain called Great Gable, he noticed a girl waving excitedly from a dangerous-looking ledge. Thinking she was in some sort of strife, he quickly headed towards her, but in doing so, he himself slipped and badly rolled his ankle. It turns out the woman that he was rescuing was in fact fine and just waving to a friend behind him. Which is, it's already the most embarrassing thing in the world if you wave at someone and then you realise they're waving back. But it's even worse if you've gone to rescue them and then you break your ankle. He stacked it so bad that the two women had to come over and help him back to his accommodation. And the woman that he went to help, her name is Catherine. She was 25 years old, so a lot younger than Chips. He was 48. He didn't have any interest in her at first because the narrator says, quote, he did not, he would have said, care for women. He never felt at home or at ease with them. And that monstrous creature beginning to be talked about, the new woman of the 90s, filled him with horror. Yeah. The new woman of the 1890s. Can you imagine?
He would have hated my guts. Yeah.
Do you see yourself as a new woman of the 1890s?
Easily.
Yeah.
If they wore pants and swore a lot. Bit of a character, like a bit of a sad figure.
Yeah, already. Well, it's not even old age. He's pretty sad already, isn't he? Mm.
Yeah.
Does he mention bashing kids?
No, he doesn't really bash him. He just makes him write lines on the board. That's it. No.
Yeah, okay.
But I mean, he might. I don't know. Yeah. They left that bit out. It's quite sentimental.
Yeah, but they openly talked about it. In I mean, they're still bashing kids up until I finished school.
Yeah, actually, you're right.
But yeah, I don't know. It's, you know, lines is pretty weak.
Well, they do actually mention also the kids getting the rod. Now you mention it.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
They don't say what they do with the rod, which is worrying. But yeah. So they're probably he is probably bashing the shit out of the kids as well. Yeah. So he's met Catherine. She's a new woman of the 1890s, and he's like, "This is
and
not
half
for me.
His age."
And half his age. Yeah.
Yeah. Terrific. Terrific.
And he's already exposed himself as an unco.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
In front of us.
So embarrassing.
Yes. If she likes him, the world's gone mad.
Yeah. Yeah. You're not. You're predicting that this will fail.
No, it's obviously going to be something. Yeah. This is his wife, isn't it?
Yeah, but he managed to outlive her, so it's not going to be great, is it?
Well, she left.
Yeah, well, she left.
Did she?
Yeah, she ran off with someone her age.
Well, maybe she had another incident with a cliff later on. <wasn't>
So this is what else it says. It says, he was a quiet, conventional person, and the world, viewed from the haven of Brookfield, seemed to him full of distasteful innovations, and there was this new craze for bicycling, which was being taken up by women equally with men. And he's not a fan. In bicycling in general. Catherine considered herself responsible for Chips' accident, so she rode her radical new bicycle to visit him every day to look after him, and at first he was not impressed. It says, quote, because she rode a bicycle and was unafraid to visit a man alone in a farmhouse sitting room, he wondered vaguely what the world was coming to. She had some pretty radical political ideas, including that women should be allowed to vote. Can you believe this? Mm. Have you heard about this? You got one. First time hearing about it. Over the days, he began to look forward to her visits, however, and she had similar trepidations for this older conservative man at first, whom she assumed would be a boring old man. But she grew fond of their time together, and the book says that within a week, they were head over heels in love, quickly got engaged, and were married in London.
I'd be interested to know if the book sheds any light on why she changed her mind, because currently I still think he's boring and conservative.
Yeah, it doesn't really say why she...
Well, it's guilt. She was guilty about his accident. That was it. That's all you need sometimes.
Yeah, relationship build on
guilt. Keep that in the back pocket.
Yeah.
Anytime, you know, they have a fight, he just starts tapping his ankle, going, huh? Remember this? Remember what you did to me by waving at your friend? The night before the wedding, when they parted for the night for the final time, she said to him that she felt nervous, like one of his students starting at the school. Hello, role play. She asked if she should call him Mr. Chips.
Oh,
here we go. Yep.
And when he left for the night, she said, "Goodbye, Mr. Chips," which, remember, is the title of the book.
Mm.
There it is.
Is she a past student? Is it a boys' school? He said,
no. "It's just a boys' school." Yeah.
Oh, okay, sorry. Yeah, go on.
So they don't know each other from that. But after their wedding, Catherine moved with him to Brookfield, the school, where she was a huge hit. Everyone loved her. I noticed that she had a very positive influence on her husband. She opened his conservative mind and overall apparently made him a new man. His eyes seemed to twinkle. His confidence grew, as did his sense of humour. It says, quote, he began to make little jokes. The sort that schoolboys like. Puns that raised laughs and at the time imprinted something in their mind. This was his go-to, it says. His solid gold. Let's see how it goes here with the live crowd today.
Yeah.
This is his one of his solid classics. Whenever his Roman history forms came to deal with Lex Canula, the law that permitted patricians to marry plebeians, Chips used to add, so that, you see, if Miss Plebs wanted Mr. Patrician to marry her, and he said he couldn't, she probably replied, oh yes, you can, you liar. Quote, roars of laughter. That's good stuff. That is That was good back then. 100 years later, that is good stuff. Roars of laughter. If Miss Plebs want Mr. Patrician, oh yes you can, you liar. Is this thing on? Great stuff.
She's just heavy lifted his boring personality into the next century.
Exactly. Yeah, I think she's given him some personality where before he had none.
Yeah.
And now he's got some people like, my God, this guy's amazing.
Was he good in the sack? Like, is that what it's about?
I was reading between the lines.
Against
absolutely.
All odds.
Against, exactly.
You know, despite the appearances.
Despite the broken ankle.
Mm.
He was able
and
to...
the sad sack nature.
Yeah, he's a great root. It said before, he was rooted. By his 40s, he was rooted. That's what I'm saying. Right, he lost his virginity at 48. Okay, finally with you now. Finally. He still commanded respect, but Catherine persuaded him to broaden his horizons and loosen his rules in the classroom. She came up with the idea that the students from a mission run by the school that they raised money for, so they raised money for this mission school but had no contact with, she said they should come up to Brookfield to play a soccer match against the private boys from Brookfield. And the very conservative school rallied against this. All the board were like, we can't have these uncouth poor students coming to Brookfield.
Yeah,
we can raise some money for them, but they can never come to the school. But Catherine pushed hard and got Mr. Chips on board, and the boys from the mission were allowed to come up, and the day was a great success. Years later, in one of our flash forwards during World War I, one of the students from the mission comes to visit Mr. Chips and tells him that his memories of the soccer match were some of the best of his entire life. Which is sad, isn't it? that's the sad bit your friend was talking about. Oh. That a soccer match was the best thing of
How
this guy's
is that?
Life.
Yeah.
This guy sucks.
He really does.
This is so bad. I hope he gets better. I hope he's just a better bloke when he's older. I doubt it.
Well, the now grown man asked Chips how his wife Catherine is. She made a great impression on him during that day when they played soccer. And it's only during this exchange that we learn that Catherine died only a short time later during childbirth. With the child. More sadness, more sadness. Chips tells the man that he's glad to hear he too has fond memories of his wife, as with the turn over from the students and other teachers, no one at Brookfield remembers Catherine at all. Tragically, a month later, Chips hears that the man who visited him was killed during the war in France. So that soccer match really was the best day of his life.
I wouldn't want to meet Chips, I don't think. You've got a cross on your head then after that. Yeah.
Did the kid survive?
The baby?
Mm.
The baby, no, sadly not.
The baby's gone.
No. Yeah. Okay. I'm willing to admit it is grim. I'm willing
it's
to admit.
It's irredeemable.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. But what about that joke? Can you liar? We get a few hints of what's to come with the war. One of Chip's memories of his students is a boy called Grayson, which one day seemed to be completely out of it in class. Grayson, the boy's out of it. Chips asks him at the end, is everything okay? Which Grayson says, yeah. He goes, oh, usually a very good student, but you were sort of distracted today. But the next day, a rumour started to spread that Grayson's father had been on the Titanic. And his fate was unknown. Thankfully, more news came through that Grayson's father had, in fact, survived the disaster, which is great news. Chips shook his son's hand and said, you must be pretty pleased with life.
But I love the staunch way a mother would just go, your dad was on that boat, you're still going to school.
Yeah. Yeah. Get in there.
It's pretty good. Try to concentrate, will you?
Yeah. It's best not to think about it. Here's some maths. He says, you must be pretty pleased with life. And the kid's like, yes, sir. But the chapter finishes with these words. It says, it was Grayson Sr., not Junior, with whom Chips was destined to later condole. Hinting at World War I was soon to come. So we're getting a bit of feel for the book here. It's a bit sad, but there are some upbeat moments. And just to bring this book to life, I've got a little scene here from the 1939 movie that I was wondering if you'd be up for acting out.
Sure. To give acting out or something. Like, yeah, okay.
I've got a little script here, if you don't mind.
Right. Do we have to stand up?
Do we have to get up?
You can sit down if you like.
Right.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So there's two characters. There's Mr. Chips, which is the lead role, and also a schoolboy. Any preferences for either of you to to play.
Oh, that's us too.
That's, yeah, you can pick a role each.
You pick Chris, I don't mind.
I'll be Mr. Chips.
You Mr. Chips?
Yeah. I'll be boy.
So, you're boy. I'll be reading some stage directions here. And this is just to bring it. This is from the 1939 adaptation. So, Chris, you just got to remember, what would Robert Donat do in this role?
Okay.
You're fantastic. Sorry, I'm a gifted director. Okay, so I'll read out the stage directions, which is, Mr. Chips runs into the scene, wearing his gown and carrying a walking stick. He bumps into the boy.
Oh, sir. Sorry, sir.
What is this? A scrimmage?
No, sir. I'm looking for assembly.
Oh, are you? So am I. Hang on to my tail. Come on. Come on.
Mr. Chips rushes up some stairs and the boy follows closely behind. They get to a door, but it won't open.
Locked out? Well, I'll be.
Chips is annoyed but stops when the boy looks at him. That's a great look from boy. Yeah.
Well, we'll have to wait. That's all there is to it.
Then there's a bit of an awkward silence.
So, you're a stinker, eh?
As a stinker, sir?
A new boy. That's what we call them here. Stinkers. What's your name?
Well, I'm Dorset, sir. You can call me Turbo. What was your...
Cobra.
Call me Cobra, yeah. Sorry, I should have said Cobra.
Turbo's so great.
No, I'll call you Dorset. The Duke of Dorset, I taught your father. He was late. Always late.
Chips points to a plaque on the wall saying, Dorset.
Ancestor of yours?
He points to another plaque. This one says, Francis Drake.
Drake? He was here? Was he a stinker too, sir?
To be sure he was. But he grew out of it, and so will you.
Are you a master, sir?
I was a master once. I've taught thousands of boys, right back to 1870. But I gave it up. Gave it up 15 years ago.
I say, you must be terribly old, sir.
Well, I'm certainly no chicken. No chicken.
End scene. Round of applause. Oh, my goodness. Fantastic stuff.
Like, you had to say no chicken twice.
He did. That wasn't improvisation. That was in the script.
Good. Love it. Good on you, mate.
How do you feel now you've played the roles?
Oh, yeah, I feel like we just trod the planks. Yeah. Pretty well. Thespianism at its finest. I don't know.
That was beautiful.
He seems to be, you know, want to be fun, you know. Is it wrong to say it feels like he just doesn't know emotional intelligence, you know? He laughs at weird things.
Yeah. But then everyone else laughs too. It's such a strange world.
I'm beginning to think Matt's absolutely correct in not watching this film or reading the book. It's pretty shit so far. Like, is there going to be an event or something? I know she died and stuff, but that wasn't that exciting. There's, you know, it's got to be something else.
Can I interest you in a world war? There's not much going on here.
Oh, no, there's not going on in the world, but I mean in the story.
In the story, yes, not much.
Chips is just rubbish, isn't he?
Yeah.
Anyway, guys, I'm hoping something. I hope he's got some sort of contribution to the war.
He's never the protagonist. Stuff just happens to him.
Stuff just happens, yeah. He cruises by, really.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
But back during his teaching years, Chips continued on and became a legend of the school, popular with students, popular with staff. That is, except for one person. the new young shot principal called Ralston, who's been appointed to take over Brookfield. And this crusty old dean has some pretty new radical ideas that don't really fit with fuddy old Mr. Chips, Mr. Chippington. Ralston called Mr. Chips into his office and asked him to consider retirement, telling him, "You're 60 and your idea of teaching is a bit old school." Mr. Chips was furious and refused to quit, but a student had been in the principal's waiting room and heard the whole thing and told his parents and other students, and soon everyone had heard of Ralston's plans to get rid of Mr. Chips. But Ralston had really underestimated Chips' popularity, and when the school board heard about it, they quietly took him aside and said, "We'll back you over, Ralston, and we hope you never retire. I hope you teach until you're 100 years old." So in the end, it was Principal Ralston who soon left. So cop that, you young dog, Ralston. Still, Chips did take some of what he said to heart, and when he turned 65, after a long bout of bronchitis, Chips decided to retire. And after 42 years, he signed off with a speech, and remember, over time he's become a serious joker known for his jokes, so of course, it was hilarious. He listed the changes he'd seen over the years at the school, the introduction of gas and electricity, the first bicycle, the measles outbreak, all the hits. He says, "I remember so much that I often think I ought to write a book. Now, what should I call it? Memories of Rod and Lines, eh? Cheers and laughter. That was a good one." People thought, one of Chips's best. Oh, no.
So he had a reputation for violence and giving out lines.
Yeah. That's right. We never heard about it, but he's known for the rod and the line, yeah.
It's not fishing.
And then he thought it was hilarious. Remember that all those lines I've given out all the time? I've bashed those kids and everyone's like, "Yes, we remember." He retired a legend. Well, that was 1913, and the next year World War I started. And over the next couple of years, the younger teachers went off to fight in the war, and the new principal asked Mr. Chips if he would consider coming back. He looked pretty fit and would be a big morale boost to the school. Chips did come back, so he was off for 18 months or something, and then he's back in a big way. And he was more popular than ever. In fact, when the principal himself got ill and died...
I know. Yeah. So, yeah. All Chips does is go to funerals.
Yeah, yeah. There's so much death. Chips was asked if he would ever take over as principal, something he agreed to, but only if they put him on as acting principal. So a man who saw himself as not educated or connected enough to ever become principal had gotten there anyway, based on the community's fondness for him and the fact that everyone else had either gone to war or died. I mean, that's all that had to happen.
Yeah, God.
Everyone better than him had to die. The war was hard as they heard of colleagues and former students being killed in action, but Chips held them all together, and we can't forget he was funny.
Yeah.
Chris, you're seeming to love this character.
I just can't believe it's turned out this way.
Man, it's grim, isn't it?
It's so grim.
Sucks.
Grim? What about this? Is a description of him? Laughter wherever he went and whatever he said, there was laughter.
I feel like the narrator didn't know the character.
Yeah. Was he too old to go and fight or something? What happened there? Why did he go
too old?
Fight?
I think he's 66 years old.
Not the outbreak of World War I, though. He wouldn't have been 48, no.
Oh, no, he's by the end of 1930, he's retired just before World War I at 65.
Oh, okay.
So,
okay.
Yeah.
Beg your pardon.
He's a bit old.
And the world needs laughter. You can't
put exactly.
You can't put them in the trenches.
That's what he wrote on the form to get away. Come on. I'm a serious comedian. The world needs this. Because it says he had earned the reputation of being a great jester, and jests were expected of him.
God.
Not from the evidence we've seen.
Old Chips was in fine form, they would say afterward. Marvellous, the way he can always see the funny side of things. One day a boy approached him. He said, "Have you been to the new cinema, sir? They've got a Wurlitzer." And he said, "And what on earth is a Wurlitzer?" "It's an organ, sir, a cinema organ." Chips replied, "Dear me, I've seen the name on the hoardings, but I always thought, imagined, it was some kind of a sausage." Laughter. Oh, there's a new Chips joke, you fellows. A perfectly lovely one.
Did he say that himself?
No, that's what, yeah.
That was the narrator.
That was the narrator saying.
Narrator's
done it again.
Oh, man.
But he did say, I should write a book. Maybe this is his book, where
it
he really
feels
bigs
like
himself up as the funniest guy in the world.
It feels like whoever did write this book couldn't find a way of translating that humour to the page.
Yeah. I mean, can you liar?
He can't come up with a better joke than that with the word organ already in the set.
Yeah,
you got a fucking problem with comedy. I'll show you organs. Whatever. I don't know. Anything. Nearly anything.
You're trying
else.
To punch up Mr. Chips.
Mind you.
Whispering in his ear.
It needs something.
Well, on the day World War One ended, November 11, 1918, there were great celebrations across the school, and on that day, Mr. Chips retired for the second and final time. His work was done, and he was then 70 years old. And with that, we are back at the start of the book in 1933. The now 85-year-old Mr. Chips looks back on his life. Remember, he's invincible. He can't get any diseases from this point. He's
don't
feeling
come back
good.
For one last job. Yeah. Bit Johnny Farnham. Yeah, he's retiring. Yeah. Get back to school, Chipsy. We need you.
One Sunday, we need you. We need your jokes. One Sunday afternoon, Mr. Wickett, or Mrs. Wickett, rather, that's the housekeeper who... He lives in her house. She's gone to town and he's all alone when the doorbell rang. Chips answered and a small and timid boy wearing a Brookfield hat walked in. The kid, whose name was Linford, asked to speak to Mr. Chips. And Chips invited him in and the kid said he was told that Mr. Chips had asked to see him. Chips realised that the new kid, who was obviously new to Brookfield, had been pranked by the other students, which is apparently an old classic. Mr. Chips wants to see you.
Okay.
But he didn't. Do you get what's going on there? This is a funny book. Funny stuff happens over and over again.
Still funnier than all of his jokes. Sending a stinker to see Chips.
Yeah. But Mr. Chips was friendly and played along, saying, "Oh yes, I wanted to meet you. Come on in." Chips spoke to him for an hour until he wrapped things up with his famous line, "I'm sorry, you can't stay." He shook the boy's hand, said goodbye, and little Linford replied, "Goodbye, Mr. Chips."
End scene.
Oh,
end book.
Does he fucking die then? Or
end me.
Yeah.
You're praying that he dies.
Yeah.
Chips was taken aback, thinking about how his young wife had once said those exact words to him. And we're all thinking, you'll never believe it, but the book about your life is going to be called that. That night, Chips had been found unconscious by Mrs. Wickett, having taken ill. The doctor was a liar. He wakes to find a bunch of staff members from Brookfield standing around his bed, and he hears someone say, "Pity he never had any children." But upon hearing that, Mr. Chips opens his eyes and says, "I have had children, thousands of them, and all boys." The word boy appears 81 times in this book. It's crazy.
Did you search? I did a search.
I got the PDF from Project Gutenberg because I was like, he said boys so much. It's eclipsed only by the word chips, which appears 161 times in the least delicious book ever. So, of course, he's referring to his students being his boys. Can I say at this time, happy Father's Day, Mr. Chips. Thousands of them. And after this outburst about thousands of boys, Mr. Chips fell asleep whilst thinking of the students and naming as many as he can. Brookfield, that's the name of the school.
Yeah.
Whatever, Reginald, Keith, I couldn't... What? Turbo.
Turbo. Yeah.
I'll never
Cobra.
Forget.
Dawson.
Cobra. Never forget the Duke of Cobra. And the next day, Brookfield was given the news of Mr. Chippington's sad passing. A speech was made saying he'll never be forgotten, which the narrator remarks is absurd, as one day everyone is forgotten. So they even make that grim. But the final line is, "But little Linford, at any rate, will remember and tell the tale. I said goodbye to Chips the night before he died." End of book. The end.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. We're applauding because it's over.
Yeah.
I'm glad too.
That
you
is.
Know.
I mean, I bet 10 pages in, you're thinking, I wish there was a different book. That is.
Yeah, me too.
It's not great, is it? Like, this is a resounding no from everyone, I think.
What,
not that we're reviewing it. But,
oh, no, we do review it. We, oh, okay. I always ask you to give it a score out of five and why, so you can absolutely tell us. But Chris, you had a question.
I just kind of wanted to know if you did any like reading about, like, was there some big themes this was meant to be about? Like, what was this?
I believe growing up, James Hilton's dad was a teacher, and it was sort of seen like a sentimental book dedicated to his own dad.
Right.
So yeah, but it was first put out in a magazine, but then it was a big hit, and like the first printing fully sold out, and there were many more after that. And a few years later, it was this big hit movie.
See, this is what you get when women aren't allowed to publish.
Yeah. whoa, slow down, 1890 comedy woman. Whoa.
They just had to change their names to make it a little more palatable for the rest of us to read.
Yeah, in the movie, they do a lot more with the love story with Catherine. She's a much larger part of the book.
You'd have to do something for the movie adaptation. Did you watch the movie?
No. I tried. There's no way you can really find it. I watched different scenes on YouTube. And it's the same character who plays young... I believe he won an Oscar for it too, Richard Donat, because he plays the young man and also the 85-year-old man. So, pretty good. Quite convincingly.
Yeah.
So I would have given you the Oscar over him, Chris.
Thanks, I was pretty happy with it. Yeah, I thought I lifted the... Yeah, thanks. Luke loved it too.
Built the dramatic tension.
Yeah, wow, what a book.
what are your thoughts? Obviously, you didn't love it, I'm feeling it, but well, you usually give it a score.
If I were an internet reviewer, and I'm not, because I'm not a sad loser, like TripAdvisor. Sort of,
TripAdvisor, like Goodreads.
This would be it, if I could give it a zero, I would. One of those, you know, you can only go 1 to 5 on some things?
Yeah.
I think so.
So you give it a 0 out of 5. Look, it's hard not to take that personally.
There's not a lot. I've got to give myself wiggle room in case I ever come back. It might be something even worse that you've found. So
yeah, okay, right.
I'll go with 1.5.
1.5, okay.
Yeah.
1.5 out of 5. Chris, how are you feeling?
Well, yeah, I think, that's not far off. Probably, like a 1. The thing...
That's probably a 1.
Yeah, I think, you've got to have light and shade, right? It can't just be boring story after... sad. You know, I care not for this man.
Yeah. Right.
And he's the lead, you know? Like, what are we... You've got to give... And also, if someone's funny, you can't... It's show, don't tell, right? You can't just say, it was so funny, and then it's not.
Well, I loved it. Yeah.
What was his best joke?
Wurlitzer. I thought it was a type of sausage.
Okay, yeah. All right.
Honestly, that is probably the one that I thought, that's the closest thing to a joke. Yeah. So one, we've got a 1, we've got a 1.5. I think I'm going to give it a... I'm going to give it a 3.
Oh, you dog.
Which is I'm very positive on the show, I've got to say. Usually it's 4s, 5s often.
He's dead, mate. Don't worry about it. Let's...
Yeah, this could be the first 2.5.
Oh, you've never gone below 3 in 91 books.
Yeah, maybe I have. Have I ever... Do you remember me ever going below a 3? Anyone listens? Maybe. Could this be the worst book
I've
ever
done? Why even
bother
having more than 3 stars?
Just because you respect the craft.
Yeah, that's right. That's good on him. He wrote it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard to publish. I agree.
Exactly. Maybe I'll give it a 2.5 out of 5, which is...
The worst ever.
The worst ever, yeah.
Okay. You've read.
Could it be? Well, at the live ones, I always get the audience to give it a score out of 5 as well via applause. I'm going to start at 1 and go all the way up to 5, but honestly, I feel like I should go the other way. Maybe I will. All right, we'll start at 5.
Yes.
So give us a round of applause if you think this is a 5 out of 5 book. Let me hear you. 5 out of 5. Anyone?
Good.
Okay. Yeah. You would have bashed them.
Probably. Yeah. Get the rod.
Yeah.
Go out there. Get the rod. Nostalgic rod work. Yeah.
All right, 4 out of 5. All right. 3 out of 5. Are we in anyone's wheelhouse here? 3 out of 5. Six. Going once. 2.5. Was I correct, anyone? That was a single clap. Single. Honestly, 1.
One
okay.
Clap.
I'm bringing it down.
Not even one person clapping, just 1 clap from 1 person.
Yeah, exactly.
So good. That's worse than nothing.
I know. Oh, well, 2. Okay. Was Heggy right with a 1.5?
Thank you very much.
1. Okay, we're bringing it down to a 0, anyone? Okay.
All right. So what we've discovered here is that all of these people are nicer than us, but not as nice as you.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's right.
That feels about right. Yeah. 2 out of 5. Okay. Wow. There we go. Well, that's it. That's goodbye. Goodbye to goodbye, Mr. Chips. I never have to read that again.
Good riddance, Mr. Chips. A remake.
Do you think, what about the 60s musical version? Do you think that could have saved it with some songs?
Did you listen to any of the music?
No, I didn't. I must
have. It's got to be dirges or something. It'd be so depressing. Can't be upbeat. It's not a Bollywood sort of thing. Is it?
I thought it was a sausage. I don't know what they're going to do with that. Well, that's thanks so much for coming. That brings us to the end of the podcast. Guys have some podcasts that people at home and also here can listen to.
Yeah, I've got one called Chris and Sarah Wear the Pants with Sarah Gall, and we look at old women's magazines and ask, has anything changed?
Very, very appropriate for, you know, the woman of the 1890s.
You found women from the 1890s, that far back?
Oh, 1840. We've gone back to 1840, even 1820s.
Yeah. Much difference between the 1820s woman and the 1890s woman?
I couldn't tell you. I haven't read enough.
Digressing. I've got a podcast called Mid-Flight Brawls about plane fights, and none of them are as bad as Mr. Chips. Like, these are people like doing bad shit on planes.
That you like more.
But you'd still rather hang out with them than Mr. Chips.
Yeah. Much more. I'd prefer to go to jail with them and not have Mr. Chips. I'd prefer no book in solitary confinement, I reckon, than Mr. Chips. If I'm in jail.
Extraordinary. You've done something special here.
Yeah, wow.
Good on you, mate.
I can't believe it. The worst book we've ever found.
I mean, I've been wanting to read more, but not now.
I've ruined reading forever. This could be the last episode of Book Chick. I've given up. Can you believe that? The worst thing ever. No, a few books ahead. Don't worry. We've got some great episodes coming up. Please. Please, don't give up on the show. Please, it gets better from here. We found rock bottom. We're bringing it back up. Yeah, this is more of a grim episode and...
Sorry, mate.
Well, we didn't write it.
No, exactly.
Still, we could have been...
Yeah, this is more grim. And
I've just nothing.
I've done later on this show. So, this is more grim than that. All right. Well, that brings us to the end of the episode. Thank you so much for coming out. Can I have a big round of applause for Chris and Luke here tonight?
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Good Chat Comedy Club, for having us. I'll be back with another book, hopefully a better one soon. But until then, as I always say here, this is my sign off. You're going to love this. I always say, on the count of three, you can join in with me if you like. 1, 2, 3. Books forever. Yeah. Good night. Thank you so much.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.